Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you for joining us on another episode of Family Matters with Kenny and Quadlin. I am your host, Kenny, and I have my beautiful wife, Quadlin, on the line. Honey, are you there?
I am. Hello.
All right. All right, everyone. Well, we'll go ahead and get started. Sorry, I'm a little late tonight. I was actually trying to help my wife get situated before I came in here and got on the phone, and I kind of lost track of the time. But we're going to go ahead and talk about how to overcome the ugly face of addiction. Addiction comes in many forms. However, regardless of the form of it, it's an illness that can destroy marriages and families. When it comes to addictions, we're talking drugs, alcohol, gambling, sex, etc. All can be detrimental to our communities and to our families when they become uncontrollable habits. How are marriages affected when one spouse has struggled with an addiction? How are the lives of children affected? And what resources are available? Can families be restored after addiction? Again, thank you for joining us on Tuesday night. Today's date is July 26th, and we're going to go ahead and begin opening the lines, and I'll call your last four, and I'll bring you on live. Caller in again, 1398. You're on the air.
Is this Brenda? How you doing?
Hey, Ms. Brenda, how you doing?
I'm fine. How are you all?
All right. I just wanted to just let you know that we are here, and you are here, and your line will be open. And if you have anything to say, Ms. Brenda, we're here to let you go ahead and speak your mind on tonight.
All right. Thank you, darling.
Yes, ma'am. Okay. Our next caller. Caller ending in 0135. Caller ending in 0135. You're on the air.
Hey, how's it going, everybody? This is Keto. And just
Keto,
glad to be here tonight.
What's up, bro?
Nothing much, man. How are you?
Man, I'm good, man. Glad to have you on the call with us again on tonight.
Glad to be here.
Yes, sir. Well, you know we got your line open, man. You have anything you want to chime in, and, you know, feel free to do so.
Will do.
All right, brother.
Call it in again.
8225. You're on the air.
Hey, guys. This is Keisha. How are you?
Keisha. What's going on?
Nothing much.
Well, I'm glad you called in on tonight. And as always, you know your line is open, so feel free to chime in if you have anything to say.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, ma'am. All right. Caller in again, 5065. You're on the air.
Hello, good evening. This is Shannon.
Good evening. Who's it again?
Hi. This is Shannon.
Oh, okay. Hey, Shannon, how you doing? Sorry.
Good. That's okay. How y'all doing?
We all are doing blessed.
Good.
Yes, ma'am. We sure thank you for calling on tonight.
You're welcome.
And, you know, as always, your line is open, so feel free to chime on in if you have anything to say.
Okay.
All right. Well, callers, we're talking about a topic that, you know, that can be near and dear, and many families have, you know, actually had to deal with it on one shape, form, or fashion. As earlier on in the broadcast, you know, I spoke on addictions when it comes to drugs, alcohol, sex, and gambling, et cetera. But if I may open up the line on tonight, I would like to kind of share some things that I have gone through when it comes to addiction. And I'm grateful to God. I'm truly grateful to God that God has delivered me from it, if that's okay with my wife to speak on it.
Go ahead, man.
All right. So, as a young man, you know, moving out on my own in the world, I was about 19 years old or so, you know, when I discovered that I had an addiction that was really, really unhealthy at the time. But, you know, this was something that was pretty much passed on to me by way of my uncles and my older cousins. And I had the problem of the addiction of pornography. As a young man, you know, growing up, you know, teenagers, our hormones are raging. And, you know, my uncles had all kinds of pornography DVDs, VHSs, you know, at your disposal at their house and all this stuff. And, you know, I just so happened to wind up seeing them. And out of curiosity, I wanted to see what was going on. You know, I want to say I was no more than, you know, grade school age at the time when I first, you know, discovered porn. And then from that point on, it just got out of hand, you know. I became a grown man, and I moved out on my own. And then, you know, I was at the point where I wasn't saved at the time when I met my wife. You know, I wasn't in the church. I wasn't living right. I was, you know, had a pretty much a worldly way of living and a worldly spin on my life. And I had a problem, and I struggled with this addiction all the way up until, you know, I got married to my wife. And this was a problem that really got out of hand, you know. I used to come home from work, you know, and I come home from work, and my wife was still at work. She worked about an hour and some change away, you know, from our home. And I would come home and to work. First thing I would do is pop up me a beer and sit down, and then I would watch a little TV. And then lo and behold, here I am sitting in front of the TV and engrossed in this pornography that was on the television screen. And it really was detrimental, you know, to our relationship, you know, because we were a brand new relationship just starting off. Both of us were young, and here I am, you know, bringing in this nasty, ugly addiction that I had no idea that had so much control over my life. So I mean, when I say we all have dealt with it on many different aspects, I must say we have, but I just want to kind of open up tonight, you know, kind of give an icebreaker and let you know that these addictions that we're speaking on tonight, you know, we're speaking live on the net, and we're talking about it, and we're opening it up and we're sharing our testimonies. But here I am. I'm grateful to God. You know, me and my wife are going on 14 and a half years of marriage, going on 15 years almost of marriage, and the Lord has delivered me from that, so I'm grateful to God for that. And I must tell you, I am truly grateful to God at how He has changed my life. He has given me a total 180 spin on you know, life itself. But I just had a caller come in on the air. I'm going to go ahead and open up the caller. Caller ending in 2488. You're on the air. Okay. All right. All right, well, we're going to go ahead and continue on. I just wanted to kind of open up tonight and kind of share some things with you. You know, I also had some other things that I experienced as a kid coming up, and that was also, you know, I got out into the in crowd, and I wanted to smoke what we called at the time a little reefer, a little weed. I thought I was doing something, trying to fit in with the in crowd, and that was another addiction along with drinking. You know, I had no problem with gambling and things of that nature, but I was out there living this life that was truly not the way I was supposed to be, you know, living my life how God had intended for me to live my life, you know, according to His will for my life. I just was out there, you know, just running wild, young and reckless, and I nearly like to cause a separation between me and my wife very early on in the marriage. So when I say it could be detrimental, ladies and gentlemen, I honestly mean it could be detrimental regardless of the addiction, you know. And I'm just going to open up the lines. If anyone has anything to say, please feel free to do so.
Hey, everybody. Okay. I think it's important to start out. Do you hear me? Can you hear me?
Of course.
Okay. And acknowledge that I think, you know, we have to realize when we're talking about addiction, it's not just, you know, a regular habit. We're
right.
Talking about something that has somehow taken control of a person's life, and, you know, it is, many describe it as an illness, they classify it as an illness, and I can actually see how, you know, it would be so. And there are a lot of people that are dealing with it even now. And one thing about it is that in some families, you know, it's hidden because a lot of times it causes shame, you know, embarrassment, you know, embarrassment. You have people that are embarrassed. I know when you and I were going through that when we first got married, and you were addicted to the pornography, that wasn't anything that I talked about because it was embarrassing. It was embarrassing to, you know, me as a wife because, you know, it affects your self-esteem. You feel like you're not good enough, what have you done wrong, you know, until you understand that it's something deeper than that. You understand it's not anything that you've done to play a part in that. It's deeper. It's way deeper than that. And it does, you know, when it begins to affect the marriage, it begins to affect the whole house, and, you know, some things go as far as, you know, it affects the job and the finances, and, you know, so it is detrimental, honey, and it's detrimental to so many, in so many areas within our life, in so many areas, because people have gotten, you know, fired from jobs for addictions to certain things. There's even the addiction of, you know, wanting to have a baby. You have some women, they become so addicted, some women that cannot have babies, and they become so addicted that they convince their husbands to take out loans that they can't afford, to mortgage their homes and, you know, put a second mortgage on their homes and, you know, spend all of this money in an effort to try to conceive, and it never works. And, I mean, I've seen this, like, on talk shows and things like that. And it, you know, they become so focused on it that that's all it's about. And I've been through infertility, but and so for those that were there when I went through it, you guys know how hard it was on me, but I'm talking about something, you know, to a whole nother level, like 2-3 times worse than, you know, what I went through. And it's like it takes over their whole entire life. So, you know, the purpose of the show, the reason I wanted to do it is so we could try to maybe discuss, you know, some root, you know, why, I guess, what is sometimes there to allow these addictions to come in, because everything has a root. And I think that's Jared, hush. And I think that's something that we have to realize, that everything has a root. What is the root? And then also, you know, what are some of the things that can be done to help families out there that may be listening now? What are some things that can be done or said that will give them hope, you know, that their families can be saved, or their families can be restored, that it doesn't have to be the end? And also we want to talk about, you know, boundaries. Where is the line? If you're that spouse that has a spouse that's married to a spouse that's addicted, then where do you draw the line? So these are some of the things that I wanted to, you know, really go into depth and focus on tonight. So, you know, in an effort to help anyone that may be dealing with that. Does anyone have anything to say thus far?
Well, yes. As far as dealing with the addictions, we can take these addictions and we can look at them as all pretty much one and the same, because, like you said before, they can be detrimental to the point of where they can cause family ties to break. They can also cause for, you know, finances to be destroyed or depleted completely in the matter or in the pursuit of that satisfaction or that fulfillment of that particular temptation, lust, or addiction, you know. And we just have to look at it basically as it is, just as you said before. It's an addiction, you know, but it's also lust. It's a temptation. It's a temptation that many people have a problem with overcoming or avoiding, and then they wound up dibbling and dabbling into this forbidden realm, and then they become hooked or attached to it, and now it's taking over their lives. You know, so that was one thing definitely that I didn't know that had spiraled out of control, which, you know, in the end almost caused me to lose you, honey. And I'm grateful to God, you know, that God showed you what you needed to be shown in order for, you know, you to have something to pray for, you know, and go on my behalf to Him for. And I'm grateful to God for that.
Thank you. And, you know, and as far as that, like I said, you know, everything has a root. So I'm glad you started off with the fact that, you know, you were introduced to porn at a young age. And I know sometimes we don't want to acknowledge this, but it is a natural battle, but it's also a spiritual battle.
Right.
It's both. I am not at all against getting therapy and counseling. You know, some people are against that, and you know, you do pray. You know, we pray, we fast, we do all that, because like I said, it is a spiritual battle, whether we, you know, want to acknowledge that or not. You know, we know Satan comes to kill, steal, and destroy, and he'll do that wherever he can, however he can, so it is. But it's also a natural battle because we do live in a natural world, and we deal with natural things, you know, because sin entered the world, then we are... Our makeup now, you know, our flesh are sinful. We're sinful beings, and so we deal with things. But there is a root. You have some people that do become addicted to certain things. People that have gone through, you know, they've been sexually molested. Like I said, with yours, the introduction to it at such a young age. You know, just different things that could cause it. People, you know, you have people that are addicted to food. You know, they have really food addictions. And some of that, you know, they'll eat when they're depressed, when they get depressed, and so they turn to food. Now that they're hungry, you know, they are depressed. So I think the first thing that should be done. This is just my opinion, and please, you know, if you all have something to say, if you disagree or you want to add on or whatever, please, because this is, you know, a discussion that we definitely need to have, and we need to hear people's input. Like I said, to find out what the root of it all is. Now, we can't go back and change it. You know, once you've been introduced to some things, you've been introduced to it. But I do think in some instances it'll help to identify, okay, where may, you know, what could have triggered this. Like I said, for, you know, some people that eat because they're depressed. Okay, well, what can we do if that's the root of it? Then what can be done when they are depressed? You know, how can we learn to recognize the symptoms of depression? And when we see those symptoms, what can we do to intervene? You know, how kind of like, you know, just like I said, you know, finding other ways to try to help overcome and conquer those addictions.
Right. Right. And honey, I'm glad you said something earlier. I just want to touch bases on a little bit about what you said earlier when you said, you know, we live in a world that's natural. So, and we live in a world, you know, a world of sin. And according to, this is basically a talking about a stumbling block, you know, if you will, when it comes to young kids and even, you know, people being introduced to a world that they shouldn't be introduced to. And that's any type of sin, any type of addiction or temptation. And Matthew 18 and 18 and 7 says, "Woe to the world because of its stumbling blocks, for it is inevitable that stumbling blocks come. But woe to the man through whom the stumbling block comes." So, you know, those stumbling blocks can come. And even back in verse 6, it says, "But whosoever causes these little ones to believe in me to stumble, it will be better for him to have a millstone, a heavy millstone, hung around his neck and to be drowned in the depths of the sea. All right, so, and I'm going to bring it home. I know y'all probably like, man, that was like way out left field. But here's the deal, right? We as Christians, we as people, we have to also remember that we have little eyes that are watching us. So these little eyes, you know, God favors his children. He favors the children, right? Because they're innocent. They don't know that they're born into sin, but they're at a point where they don't understand, you know, good and evil, if you will. They haven't basically, if I can use an analogy, when it comes to Adam and Eve, they haven't been introduced to the tree of knowledge of good and evil yet. So they're innocent children. And if we cause them to have a stumbling block, just like I had this stumbling block that came about with this pornography, we cause them to stumble. The Word of God basically says, woe unto that person that caused that person to stumble, or to cause his child to stumble, his little children to stumble. You know, the ones who believe in him, even saints. Saints, we tend to get in situations and we tend to throw off an image, you know, that we're not intending on throwing off. Whereas, you know, even when it comes down to the way a man dresses, or how a man is flirtatious with women, he's really thinking he's just being cordial. He's really thinking he's just being kind and polite. Whereas, you know, women, sometimes it could be a matter of how a woman dresses or whatever, you know, that could be, because men are visually and physically stimulated. Just women are too, but men are more stimulated and physically, visually stimulated than women are, for the simple fact that, you know, we're more prone to get introduced to stuff like, you know, going to strip clubs and pornography and things of that nature, and it tends to be something that's feeding the flesh, you know, and then the flesh man rises up, and then now you're addicted to it, and here's where the addictions come about. Because just as you said earlier, honey, you said it's a natural battle, but it's also a spiritual battle. So I just wanted to throw that in there a little bit, honey. I'm sorry about overtalked.
Does anyone have anything?
Shannon.
Go ahead, Shannon.
Yes. So, for one, I grew up in a home where my father was addicted to drugs and alcohol. And with his addiction, for the most part, the end result of that was destroying the family. My mom ended up, I was born in Jacksonville, but we ended up moving to Atlanta, and so they got a divorce and all of that. So, but anyway, when I was younger, my first sexual experience was when I was 14. And the guy was 28, and that's how I lost my virginity. So then, with me, my addiction after, like, my first so-called being in love relationship at 15 to, like, 21, after that relationship, and then I was hurt again, I just started just basically just going crazy. That's just how I look at it. And, you know, my lifestyle became very promiscuous, extremely promiscuous, and reckless. That's what I call it. But during the time I was studying psychology, I was in college, and I would read things, you know, like relating your sexual behavior to, you know, different things that you were exposed to and issues with your father, so, you know, women with their father issues, whatever. But I was in denial. I was like, nah, ain't nothing wrong with me. I just like sex. So, but it wasn't until I got old, grown, real grown, and then I started to reflect, and I'm like, okay, well, I do have an issue. But the first thing is, a person has to be able to, one, acknowledge that there is an issue, because as long as you are in denial, well, whatever it is that you may deal with, you won't change. You won't change that behavior, regardless of a lot of times the different outcomes of it. Because with me, I have four children. I have four children by four different men. I dealt with STDs, but then none of that slowed me down. You know, I was still on that path until I finally made up in my mind, like, okay, this is raggedy. This is just a mess. Then, just like Kenny was saying, you have, you know, people looking up at you. And not with my children, I was like, you know, I don't want my girls going through. I have three girls, and my oldest is my son. But my thing was, I didn't want my children, my girls, to repeat the things that I did. And I didn't. They didn't know, you know, there were different people coming in the house because I was very discreet, or I thought they didn't know. They, you know, they were young. But regardless, I pop up pregnant, and they like, okay, well, who you pregnant about? Because there ain't no man living up in here. So what's going on? So it was just finally I had a reality check with myself, and I was like, okay, one, I need to, you know, be a better example for my kids. Two, I could kill myself with the type of behaviors that I was participating in. And then it wasn't – and I think people – I know I did it to fill that void, to fill whatever it is that's missing. And what was missing was my daddy's love. And so from that, and then, you know, getting into another relationship young and looking for, you know, a replacement type of love, manly love or whatever, and then I got broken again. So I just was like, forget it. I don't even care. It don't even make me no difference. And I like sex. So, okay, this is it right here. But then I just was like, no, I'm good. This too much. And so then I got to a point to where I stopped being promiscuous, but I was still, you know, just sleeping with this person, and then, okay, for 3-4 months, and sleeping with somebody else for 4-5 months or whatever the case. So then I just was like, nope, I got to be done with all of this because it's not healthy. It ain't good. So then I made a decision. So I've been celibate now for 20 months, and I still, you know, it's my challenge. But I'm thankful. I'm so thankful. I'm so grateful that I was delivered from those type of activities, and that I'm willing to save myself, you know, because I had to make a commitment to myself and as well as God. But first, you still have to commit to yourself, because you can pray all day long, and then you got somebody in your bed. That don't work. So I had to make a commitment to myself and say, okay, well, Lord, I'm going to stop. And then, you know, God is helping me get through this journey. But that's my testimony, my 2 cents about addiction.
Thank you for sharing that, Shannon. You have come a long way, and I'm very proud of you.
Very proud of you. Glory to God.
Thank you.
And you know, you brought out something that we definitely, you know, we talked about before, but something that definitely does go with what we're talking about. You know, you were missing your father's love. And, you know, it goes with, there is a root, whether it's, you know, missing the love of attention of your father, whether it was, you know, the love of or the attention of your mother. You know, there is something there that starts it, because, you know, the way addictions take over and they come in and they, you know, impose and control a person's life, I personally just don't believe that when people are truly, truly happy, you know, or joyful, that that's something that they really, really want. I don't think people just want to lose their families and you know, lose everything or, you know what I'm saying, become involved in relationships with people that are not loving them. You know, I just think it's so much more to that. You know, whether we realize it or not, when we're in it, I think it's so much more. We have a lot of people that are walking around. You know, a lot of times we're walking around and we're hurting and we're torn on the inside, and we don't even realize it. We don't even realize where it came from. We just, you know, we don't realize why we do some of the things that we do. We don't realize why we react some of the ways that, you know, we react. But it's because there is a root, there's a start of something. There's something that started it. And so I'm so glad that you brought that out, because that is, you know, part of it for a lot of, you know, a lot of young ladies and even men. You know, a lack of love, a lack of attention, rejection, you know, those type things. We have Pastor Michelle and Deacon Page. Your lines are open if you have anything to say. Thank you for calling in.
Thanks for having us, Pastor. I just came in on the end of it, so I'm still listening right now.
Okay. I am too. Whenever you guys want to come in, just come on in there. Now, Shannon, and you are right. You have to take responsibility. And I did write down just a couple of things. Also, for the spouse that may be married to a spouse that has an addiction, do not be honest. Be honest with your spouse and do not enable them. Because sometimes that is the problem. Sometimes people really don't see it. Like you said, Shannon, you didn't see it. Like Kenny said, he didn't see it. And sometimes, you know, people bring things to us, and sometimes we're just not ready to receive it. But sometimes in the beginning, you really just don't even see it. You don't know it. You are just completely clueless that that's what it is. So if you are a spouse that's married to a spouse that has an addiction, you have to be honest. We cannot enable. By not being honest, by making excuses, by not saying, okay, you need to accept responsibility and you have a choice in this, because the fact of the matter is people can overcome addiction. It's not the end of the world. I've seen it happen over and over again. You know, sometimes it may take something traumatic for them to make the decision. However, you know, as long as you are alive, you have breath in your body, as our pastor used to say in Texas, I'm just foolish enough to believe that if you want to do it, that God is just going to meet you there. He's going to help you. I'm just foolish enough to believe that. So it's not the end. Mm-hmm. It's not the end. So the spouse can also not be in denial of the person's addiction. That's not making the situation better at all. Also, educate yourself. Shannon, you said something about that. So that's something else that's very important that we do. If you know that your spouse is addicted to something, I don't care what it is, begin to educate yourself on that. Begin to educate yourself on addiction. Educate yourself spiritually and educate yourself naturally. Get a support team. Find support. Like I said earlier, a lot of times we don't want to talk about things because it's embarrassing. But we have to keep in mind that there's nothing, as they say, there's nothing new under the sun. There's nothing new. I promise you that we're not the only one. I know the scripture, baby. I know it's in the scriptures about it's not uncommon. We know that you're not the only one that's dealing with it. There are other people that's dealing with it, other spouses that's dealing with it, there are other parents that's dealing with it, and other children that are dealing with it. So educate yourself, get help, and get support. Because without support, it's hard. It's hard going through. And then, you know, it's something else about talking. It's something about talking to somebody else that has been through it, because they can give you help, they can give you corners, they can give you resources that you may not know about, you know. And so we've lived in a time for a long time, you know, especially, you know, blacks, but this is not just for black people, but I'm just saying for black people. We have, you know, it was a time where, you know, whatever happens, you just keep it in the house, you don't talk about it, you don't say anything. And we know it's really time out for that. We need to talk about some things. We need to talk about stuff. We need to talk about it. Because how are we going to deal with it if we don't talk about it? Not talking about it, not dealing with it, it just keeps us in bondage, and it's a continuous cycle.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. I had a friend once that I was stationed with in Colorado, and let me tell you, he was an avid gambler, right? He gets some money in his pocket. If it's $20, he's going to go and get him a lottery ticket, or he's going to go find some way to bet his money at the track, you know. And he was always trying to, you know, he had that bug, you know, that greed bug for money. Like, he just had to have that urge. And that, it was the thrill of the chase of gambling that just made him utterly, in the end, lose his family. And, you know, these addictions, they come in all shapes, forms, and fashions. But in the end, they're all coming when it comes to the detriment and the harm in which it brings about in the family unit. And it doesn't just affect, you know, husband and wife, it affects children, it affects mothers of the spouses, fathers of the spouses, you name it. Sometimes the list can go as far as to the cousins, you know. But these things that we're mentioning on tonight, very detrimental. It can cause some serious harm, and it can also cause not only harm but rejection, bitterness, hate, and then therefore causing another stumbling block, leading for people to be deceived by looking for love in the wrong places and searching for things that they didn't get because of they're trying to find this fulfillment of or satisfaction for something that they were lacking in their lifetime.
And I just wanted to ask, and I know, you know, Kenny, you've touched on it, Shannon, you've touched on it, but both of you have shared before on the show that you grew up in homes, you know, with parents that were addicted to drugs and alcohol. So as kids, you know, as children, how would you describe your feelings as, what did you go through as a child growing up that way?
Well, for me, I went through all types of emotions. I was literally on an emotional roller coaster, you know. I don't know if you all have seen the video where the young man the young child is screaming at his mom and he winds up continuously slapping his mom. But I seen my mom go into those trances like that, you know, and it just used to break my heart to see her like that because I knew there was something going wrong. I just knew that person at that moment, at that time, was not my mom. And it always would happen, you know, after we've gotten home from school and you know, we kind of somewhat got settled down for the night. You know, and you know, we went out in the streets playing with other kids and things of that nature. And you know, I went on all kinds of emotional roller coasters. I used to find needles. I used to find bags of crack cocaine. I found, you know, you name it, all kinds of stuff. And it used to break my heart to see that. And, you know, there were times where, you know, me growing up as a kid, here I am, you know, 7, 8, 9 years old, 10 years old even, where my mom would go on this bench and she would be gone for like a couple of days or she'd be gone all night while we're asleep. And then we wake up and I'm getting me and my little brother ready for school. So I went on a bunch of different types of emotions at that point. And there were times where I even just resented the fact that she was even my mom, you know. But today, I don't have the best relationship with my mom. But I don't hate her, and I look back over my life, and you know, I can see where the drug addiction and stuff, and the alcohol, and the loose living, it actually not only was shown to me, but it also rubbed off on me, to where I got out there and I was, you know, in the clubs, you know, having all of these different relationships with girls, having promiscuous relationships, having, you know, sex. Outside of marriage, because I wasn't married yet, you know what I'm saying, and the list goes on and on. I was smoking weed, you know, I was doing all the things that I shouldn't have been doing, but in essence, I think it kind of rolled off on me because of the environment that I grew up in.
With me, it was an emotional roller coaster as well, but I will say, up until I was about 10, it was like a perfect, well, not perfect, because my daddy, he has a different type of mentality like that. You know, your woman, your wife is supposed to do what you say, and if she don't, if she get out of line, the man's supposed to put it in line. So even before the drugs, he had that mindset, but it wasn't all the time. Like, he wasn't just an abusive, you know, abusive to my mom, like, every day, every night. It wasn't like that. So up until when I was maybe like 10 years old, I probably had only seen him hit my mom maybe about, I don't know, maybe 3-4 times. I can't even remember exactly. But I was a daddy's girl. Well, I mean, my daddy, we went places, went to my grandmama's house, you know, just me and him. Whatever I wanted, he gave it to me. So when the drugs came and then the abuse got worse, I was more hurt than anything because I'm like, okay, where my daddy? Because this man ain't him. So, and then I was fearful of him
because he would just get to a point to where he couldn't, you know, he was out of his mind. He would be extremely high. And so nobody really could talk to him. But I will say when he really got out of hand and if my parents were fighting, he would listen to me. Like, I'd be like, okay, stop, leave her alone. He'll, you know, I don't know, something would trigger. And then he would, you know, he'll leave her alone or whatever the case. But with me, it was more so like, what happened to my daddy? Where did you go? Because this ain't him, and I was more heartbroken than anything. So even to this day, because now he's off drugs. He's been off drugs for like 3 years now, but he drinks too much. But I'm still the same daddy's girl. I love him even where he is now. So I don't hate him. I don't have like a bitter relationship with him. I call him. We talk. I visit Florida. You know, I treat him just like I would treat him, you know, if I was a little girl. Now, my brother, I personally think he has a different type of relationship with my dad. He don't really reach out to him the way I do. So their relationship is different because he's younger than me. But what happens, though, when you are going through a situation where, you know, your parents or you have a parent that's on drugs or whatnot and going through this type of experience, you end up becoming typically the older child. If you are the oldest, I was the oldest. So you will adopt the mother or the father role, and that's what happened with me. I got to make sure we get to school on time, fix breakfast, cook, all this stuff, and I'm in elementary school. So, you know, you form an early role of being independent, and, you know, I can just handle it because that's really what you have to do. But, yeah, with me, it wasn't necessarily, you know, like I hate him or anything like that. I still love him to death. I want him to get off of this alcohol. But that's him. That's what he has to get through, you know. But I do know that not having my daddy had a lot to do with the experiences that I had in my lifetime. And during my healing process, I did go to counseling. And the counselor, she suggested that I write my daddy a letter just to explain to him how I felt. But I never did. I never did. But I did, you know, I wrote a poem. And I got it out. I told him exactly how I felt. He didn't agree with it. He like, I don't know. I don't know what he thinking, but he to me, he didn't want to accept it. That's how I see it. But needless to say, it did help. So talking to people, writing, I journal. I have so many journals. So whatever it is that you're dealing with, if it's just brokenness, not necessarily any addiction, but therapy does help, as well as journaling help, and talking to somebody also helps. So that's my comment.
Right. Right. Thank you. So what would you all say to a parent? Okay, there's a couple out there, and one of the parents is dealing with an addiction. What would you say to the one that's not dealing with the addiction as far as suggestions to help the children?
Well, what I would say to the one that's not necessarily dealing with the addiction, you know, head on, but is dealing with it indirectly, you have to guard the children, you know, because the children eventually will grow up and they will become adults. And sometimes when children are exposed to things that, you know, they don't really know too much about when they're young. As they get older, their mind tends to mature, and then they think back and they're looking back over their life, and they're like, man, I can't believe mom or dad allowed me to go through this. And, you know, and then they wind up having a resentment, and then there you have it. You know, the hurt, the harm, and the torment, and the separation is now back full circle. But this time you're dealing with you're not dealing with a child. Now you're dealing with a mature young adult, or possibly even an adult. You know, and for the longest of times, that can destroy a family to the point where, you know, you have family members that don't even want to talk no more. So I really think you have to do what's at the best interest of the child or the children first, and then you'd have to definitely make sure that, you know, the one that's dealing with it indirectly has also guard themselves as well. So that means, you know, having a separation or at least trying to seek help or sought out help for, you know, the person that's dealing with the addiction, you do that. But sometimes you have to do that from afar. And what I mean by that is, you know, while the children are at school, you and your spouse, or you and your boyfriend or girlfriend, you go to counseling together, you know, but you're doing it without the kids present at the moment. But you still have to be able to guard the children. That's just my opinion. Not saying that's neither right, not saying that's wrong.
I think also, Pastor Ken, I think one of the things you got to do, especially when you're talking about the people not dealing with it directly and they're having kids, is if those kids are at a certain age, and I say it's a certain age as in meaning you know your own kids, you know at what age they can handle information. I think one thing to help them out when they get older is while they're older, is while they're the age that they are, if they are able to handle information, explaining them what's going on. But explain it to them in an intelligent way, not a demeaning way, because we know we can bash those ones that are addicted. But in an intelligent way, to say why things are happening, why this is happening, this is why daddy say don't do this, and this is why daddy say don't do that, because this can happen to you. And then as they understand things and they get older, they don't hold that same resentment in that they may have 20 years back because they didn't know. But they know, and they know a little bit more about it. So when they friends, because, you know, friends, kids don't talk. When they friends start mm-hmm. saying something about your daddy did this and your daddy mm-hmm. did this and your mama yeah. did this, they can intelligently not to combat it, but to dispute it, or even to, you know, to embrace it, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
Because those Thank kids you. Are going to grow up, they're going to grow up at some point hating their parents or whoever it may be until they finally, like you said, I think it was Shannon, until they finally get it out, whether it's through a letter or through a book or something. Because I know for myself, my mom, she was more of a controlled gambler. And I say controlled gambler. She did her gambling, whether it was at the doll tracks or bingo and stuff. But it wasn't to the point to where, okay, somebody about to die from it, but it was to the point where, okay, you're always gone and I don't see you. And there's a note. You get off work and your work, when you get off work, you at the dog track, and I see you the next day after you get off the second job. So therefore, it's to the point to where it went until 2014 that I wrote her a letter, and I wrote her maybe a 2-page letter explaining to her all the things that she missed and all the things that I wanted as a kid. And I was the middle child, but I was forced to grow up quicker than normal. And I wrote her in 2014, and after saying all those things I said to her, and this is after years of not even speaking to her, you know, in that type of status, she wrote back in a one-page letter, maybe 5 lines, and I read it to my wife, and I still have that letter to this day, and all I could say was, that was it. And but I didn't do it for her, and my wife mm-hmm. explained it to me as well, that I did it for myself, and I felt a little better doing it, you know. And she would tell me, when she finally did get to see my family and visit my family, which was years and years later, and she would tell them things completely different, you know. And my kids would say something to me, and I just look at them, because when she first saw them, it wasn't with me. I would just look at them and say, okay, that's what your grandma said, but that's not how life was. Because even to her, it was all, you know, Jordans and getting whatever you want for Christmas and all that type of stuff. But the reality was, it wasn't that.
Mm-hmm.
So it takes somebody explaining to those kids exactly what's going on in an intelligent way, so those kids can be able to better deal with it, because they're going to go through it as well, not just the parents or just the adult that's facing that person that's addiction, but the kids are going to feel it as well. But they're going to want their uncle, their grandma, their aunt, and wonder why every time they come over, they sleep because they drunk or something. So they're going to want this. So somebody got to explain it to them.
Right.
And if I may piggyback off my husband, if you don't mind just for a moment. We were dating when he went through a lot of those things, and I, as his girlfriend, did not understand, like, why is your phone off? Why is your lights off? You know, and things like that. And like he said, it was years, it was well over 10 years that he did not speak to his mom for various things. But a lot of it, I think, was because he felt like I'm a grown-up, and I just don't have to deal with it. Now, me coming in, not just a girlfriend, now being a spouse that has his children, my children are deprived another side of a family because of what he went through as a child, and it took years of begging him. And so when he finally says she can come, I don't want to be here. He let her come during deployment, and it was great. It was great. Yes, she exaggerated things, and she would say, my kids had the best of this, and I'm looking like, wait a minute, I remember, and it wasn't like that. But she embellished it for the sake of, I don't know, did she really think this was her life or what? But it ended up as being now married to the grown man who was hurt as a child, and not letting that go with what her addiction was. It was still an addiction. It was gambling, still an addiction. I suffered early on in my marriage per her addiction. I remember paying $2,500 a few times so she wouldn't get evicted, and $3,000 this time, and giving her the car and all kinds of stuff. Still dealing with the addiction. Now on the spouse side as having children, because he didn't let that go, and he dealt with it the way he felt like he needed to deal with it, like, I'm a grown-up, I don't have to deal with it, my children doesn't have to be a part of it, then you have grandchildren. Now she has these grandchildren that suffered and didn't have the opportunity to know who she was. So it was a teaching that I got taught, that my husband taught me so much about so many things. So I was honored to be able to teach him to love a person where they are right now in their life. You have to love them where they are. Not what you expect them to be, but where they are right now. And once he accomplished that, like he said, it took him being deployed in Germany and actually talking to Pastor Kenny. Him and Pastor Kenny has a lot of similarities in their lives. He did the venture that I never thought that he would do, and he did it, and he didn't tell me until after. And I remember reading the letter and crying. I was very overwhelmed, and when he read it to me, and I just cried, because to me it was the beginning of a release. And so if it doesn't get taken care of like it should have when he was a young boy, it does carry over to adulthood. You do start treating your children differently, and I'm not saying you don't love them, but you try to shield them from your past hurt and things like that. So addiction is a hard place. It's a very hard place.
I completely agree. It does come over into the marriage. I too have, experienced that. And there's something that Shannon said, and also Deacon Page said, and when Shannon, when you were talking about how you pretty much had to take the role, you had to grow up and you had to take that role, and Kenny had to do the same thing. And I've told you before, I see. Like you guys, I see a lot of the same traits in you guys, even though you're very different, but at the same time, it's obvious that there is something in common, if that makes any sense. I see that, whereas there's some things I like, y'all get up, take charge, da da da. And like me, I'll still be standing back, because I didn't have to do that. But I see a lot of those same traits, and it is like that, I guess, when you have to say, kind of cut your childhood short. Okay, I have to, this is what I have to do. I got to do it. It has to be done. We need school clothes. We need this. And, and I have to be the one to do it. And so I do commend you all, for that. You, Deacon Page, I commend you all for that, because that really does take a strength. It truly, truly, it does. And one thing that I hear from all of you all that I would say to someone, who may be an adult child that has gone through this, is it is important to come to terms with what has happened and forgive, because I can hear from all three of you all that you have gotten to a point, of forgiveness, regardless of what you may have gone through. you know, nobody is resentful towards their parents, nobody hates their parents, and that's a big thing because you have adults that have gone through, you know, that with their parents, you know, gone through their parents were addicted to whatever it was because, you know, different addictions, same thing, though. And they went through that, and today they still, you know, like you said, Kenny, they don't talk to them. They resent them. They, you know, they hate them. They've let that kind of, you know, stop their lives in a way. Not stop their lives, but, you know, hinder. Because anytime we harbor, you know, unforgiveness and bitterness, then it is hindering us. So that's something that I've just, you know, I gathered from all three of you guys, and I just think that that's awesome.
Well, thank you, honey. Thank you, honey. And Sid, Shannon, I thank you all for sharing your story here on the show tonight. And Pastor Michelle, I thank you very well for sharing your story also. And you share basically, you know, exactly what you had to go through. And see, we can see just how an addiction or a lifestyle can be detrimental on any angle of life. I mean, indirectly, you had to deal with the hurt and the pain of having to see, you know, Bruh Said go through what he's going through, you know, or what he has gone through. And granted, you know, it is tough, but, you know, I honestly can see and hear the resilience in our voices over the phones on tonight and the strength that, you know, God has blessed us with because he's graced us with a lot of strength to go through that. Because, you know, there are very well some people that go through that. We all know that may handle that stress differently. They may end their lives. They may end the lives of you know someone around them because of that. What have you? But you know clearly all of the addictions they have the same common result end result, and that is it causes detriment.
Right.
I'm sorry, Pastor Clark, go ahead.
No. You go ahead. Go ahead.
And I think one of the ways that I deal with it is, learned to deal with it is, I'm grateful for that part of my life that I had. And the reason why I say that is because it helped me develop to be the man I am today. And sometimes when we're going through those things, we don't look at the outcome of it. Because who knows what that diamond had to go through before it became a diamond. So
right.
The things that you go through, and you can quote me on that one. The things that you go through, if you stay in it long enough, you're gonna get through it, and it helps develop you as a person. Like you said, you see that people take charge and stuff like that. It develops you in different ways. So that's one of the ways I look at it is I'm glad I went through it because it made me the person I am today. No, I did not like it when I was going through it. But me looking at the younger me back then, I'm glad I went through it because it made me how I am now.
Mhm. Mhm. And something else that you three are truly an example of is life is choice driven. Our pastor and our other pastor in Texas, he used to say this all the time. He was also addicted to drugs for many years. And even into his marriage, he knew his mom had always spoken over him that he was called to be a pastor and everything, but he, you know, he tells the story of how he would go up to the altar on Sundays. He would go in the church high, drunk, and he would go up to the altar because he really wanted to be delivered. And he, one thing that he always, you know, said over and over and over again, life is choice driven. And I think that that is something that the three of you do show, you know, that although there may have been a fed, you know, you had some residue from some things, but you guys, you know, you chose to go a different route. You may have touched it a little bit in some areas, you know, but you made a choice. You made a choice. You made a choice to surrender your life to Christ. You made a choice. You know, all three of you are successful. You love your kids. You're not saying that your parents didn't. I'm just saying you all love your kids. You're reaching higher heights, and so I just commend you all on that because we need to hear those testimonies. People need to hear that, hey, this does not have to be the end. I know you're having a hard time. I know you had a hard time. I did too, but you can make it. You keep striving. It's not the end. You can. You'll have your moments. You'll deal with it, you know, but you can make it. You still can. And so I think that is great. That's wonderful. And so I just encourage, you know, people to know, if we have any listeners, anybody come back and they, you know, listen to the show. It does not, like I said before, it does not have to be the end. Know that God is able. He's a deliverer. Know that there are resources out there. You know, there are, get counseling, get therapy, talk to somebody. Know you're not alone. But, you know, in the midst of all that, pray, seek God, because he is a deliverer. He truly, truly is.
Yeah, amen. He is. He's truly a deliverer. And I'm blown away on the topic on tonight, you know, because it's always good for everyone that you know calls in on the line to see that their problem that they had to go through, their situation they had to go through, they didn't have to go through it alone. It's, you know, there are other people that had to go through it, but then you also get to hear, you know, the solution. Like, what did you do to get through your hard time in life? And tonight was truly a testament of our faith. And Shannon, I want to definitely touch base on something you said earlier on in the show, where you said mm-hmm. that you truly had to come to yourself, and you pretty much said you came to your senses and said, hey, look, I gotta chill out with this, I gotta fix this, and you acted in accordance to Romans 12:1. Where it says, therefore I urge you, brethren, by the mercies of God, to present your bodies a living and holy sacrifice, acceptable to God, which is your spiritual service or your reasonable service. So you made a sacrifice to do that, and you decided to definitely hold yourself and hold yourself for your spouse, and God is going to honor it. He's going to honor that. He's going to honor you in that. So I commend you on the 20 months, and sister, I encourage you to keep on going, and you know, and just trust God, because you know your husband is coming. He's coming.
Well, praise the Lord.
Amen. Girl, I know. I hope he come on for you too. I hope he come on.
Go ahead.
Oh yeah, there's just one thing I noticed that, like, in everybody's discussions. That, you know, that everybody first, the first thing, you know, with their addiction is they noticed that there was a problem, you know, and that also is, you know, like, that's the first step to fixing your issue, is admitting that you have a problem, you know, and like mm-hmm. so many people face addiction and they don't want to admit that it's a problem. They think, oh, well, you know, I only spend $200 at the crack every week, you know, I still pay my bills, I'm good. You know, they don't want to admit that they have a problem, and that's part of the reason why there is no road to recovery, because they want to admit that there's an issue.
Right. That's right. We have to admit it. We have to take responsibility, because, well, we can't blame everybody else for our issue. So you're right. That's the first step. First step. So if there's anybody listening and you're struggling with something and somebody keeps it, and that's something else. Listen, if you're listening and you've had several people to tell you that you have this issue, it's an issue. I had to learn that. When everybody kept telling me about my tone and stuff and my facial expression, I had to realize it was an issue. So if you have several people telling you, sir, now, I don't agree about, you know, how I was, how they say I was when I was pregnant with Mariah and my eating and stuff. I think everybody's wrong. Every single person that says that, all of them are wrong. But
okay, I just wonder.
If you have several people that are telling you, then it is an issue. So, you know, we have to just stop being prideful, because that's what it is. You know, we don't want to see things about ourselves. We just don't. But we have to stop being prideful, and we have to learn how to listen. We have to listen, take responsibility, and, again, know that everybody has something. So just because I might be dealing with this and this is my issue, and some, you know, my friend might not have this issue, but my friend still has an issue. We're all struggling. We're all trying to make it, you know, so we can't think that it's making us less than, because it's not. It's not making us less than. We are human, and the only way we're going to get better and get past all of these issues and all of these bondages and things, you know, get over these things and these things, you know, for these things to be broken is, you know, we have to admit it. We have to listen. We have to let the pride go and allow God to be who he is.
Amen. And with technology on today, when we're talking about what resources are available, ladies and gentlemen, you can just type in a word dealing with an addiction, and there are so many different resources that will pop up. So to the person that was obedient to God to create the internet, God bless your heart. God bless your heart, because this show has been a blessing to me. But you know, you can just go in and just type in anything, and one thing I want to leave you all with, right? And that is this. Most of the time, when there's something that we're dealing with that we know is abnormal or not of the norm, or it's what we consider frowned upon behavior, many tend to shy away from that and try to push themselves away from that in a sense of, in a state of denial. And if we're not willing to head on this problem or this addiction or this situation or this lust or this fantasy, we're not willing to head on to this thing, you know, and deal with it head on, then we'll never get over it. We'll never conquer it. But conquering it and knowing is half the battle. So if you know you got an addiction, you know, if you know you're dealing with something, or you know that there's something, and you know that there's turmoil and trouble all around you and your family's falling apart, that self-examination is very important. And once we look in the mirror and say, hey, man, or hey, girl, you know, as a woman would say to herself, you know, you really got to pick yourself up. You got something you're dealing with, because it's hurting a lot of people around you. So if we don't deal with it, it's also a form of selfishness. So we have to be willing to deal with it. And that's pretty much my story, and I'm sticking to it. I love you all, and I thank you all definitely for calling. That's just my piece for tonight. I know my wife is going to have some, but Shannon, you're definitely welcome to open. The floor is yours.
Oh, well, basically, I agree completely with the things that Kenny said. When you are dealing with whatever the addiction is, or if you are a result of being exposed to, you know, parents or, you know, close family members who did have addictive types of behaviors, I mean, it affected you. After you have said, okay, yeah, I have an issue, I have a problem, you have to commit to change. Because if you don't commit to change and tell yourself that, one, I'm going to do this, you're not. Mm-hmm. You can pray to whenever. You have to, one, admit, saying, because I asked my daddy, how did he get off of drugs, you know, from 30 years? He didn't go to rehab. And he said, it's in your mind. He said, it's in your mind. Mm-hmm. And when I told myself I was done, I was done. I was like, it's that simple, but, hey, it worked for him. It worked for me.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's just my last little comment.
That's true, and thank you for that. And I do know people that it has, you know, worked for as well. Kenny is the same with him, with drinking, the porn, and, you know, cigarettes. He made a decision, and you know, and he's.
Yeah, I know. I used to smoke, y'all. I know. I'm sorry.
Crazy.
I was such a bad person.
Now, whatever. Whatever. And he made a decision to finally listen to his wife and stuff, and, you know. So all that little thing he just did about recognizing and, you know what I'm saying, realize you heard it. Yeah, you know, all that came from me. But anyway. Anyway, does anyone have anything else to say? Nothing. Okay. Well, thank you all for calling in. We will be back here on Friday night with the Free Flow Friday. I don't know what the topic is going to be yet, but, hey, we're open for suggestions. So if you guys have any suggestions, you know, please let us know. Please let us know.
I know, that's right. We would love to have a co-host, you know, a cameo. You know what I'm talking about? Come on with it. Free flow Friday.
And I ask that you guys, tomorrow I have my blog posted on mytrendingstories.com. Yay, me. Yay, God is good. So I ask that you guys go and follow me. Of course, y'all know I'm going to put some on Facebook. So follow me, bigger platform. You know, I'm so excited. I'm excited about what God is doing. So we thank you guys. Have a great night. And Shannon, what's your blog? Can you give out your blog real quick?
Yes. So I just posted a blog recently about getting through my challenges and stuff and waiting and all of that good stuff. But the blog is actually it's www.talk2missjones, and it's just msjones.com. So www.talktomissjones.com.
Mrs. Jones.
So I ask that you all, you know, when you get time, go and check out her blog. Wonderful. It's real. Y'all think I'm real. No, Shannon real. No, Shannon real, y'all. Put it out there. I loved it. It's
I know. I read it.
So I ask.
Oh,
yeah,
thank
isn't
you.
It? It's good and raw. Now, that's what people, that's what these ladies need to read now.
That's right.
thank you all so much.
You know, support her in that, share it. We're trying to come up with some money for her son, get ready to send him off to school.
California.
So, you know.
Yeah, he'll be in California.
Yep. So let's support each other. Thank you guys for support. Well, y'all already do. Y'all are supporters. So thank you for support. I love you guys, and you all have a good night.
You too. Bye-bye.
You too.
Good night.